This is the voice of the private sector, Brian Bushlack's Business Briefing, presented by Uity.
Okay, some concerns about the economy as we close out April and open up May. Welcome to the voice of the private sector, Brian Bushlack, with you from our studios in Portland this weekend, where I caught up with the chairman and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title. Want to get some perspective from Patrick Stone.
Hey, Pat, good to see you. Now, the Federal Reserve releasing their latest statement. What did you make of that?
Well, I think it reflects a general change towards a more upbeat attitude long-term and globally. And I think what the Fed is saying is that some of the international concerns are abating. They still are on the fence, but I think the likelihood of a rate increase in June has probably gone up fairly significantly. I think you'll see one in June. Maybe you'll see another one in December. I don't think you're going to see four this year by any stretch, but I do think the Fed is getting a little bit more confident in the global economy.
That's good to hear, because we see headlines, and it's, you know, that point-to-point, that data-driven mentality where, you know, you see a headline about a recession or a concern about something overseas, and it tends to spook people a little bit.
It does. And, you know, here's one of the things that happened is that the media, and you know, I don't want to be critical here because, you know, they've got to sell newspapers, access, clicks, views, whatever. The media focuses on the large stories. And that, of course, means that they focus on the large countries, the prominent countries, for example, what we used to call the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, three of which have had a pretty tough time. India is the only one that's been growing. And then, of course, they focus on the Mideast and they focus on Europe. Here's an interesting thing. Outside of all those countries, there's about another 150 countries in the world. And we're seeing actually stability to slight growth in the underlying world economy. India has been doing very, very well. Russia, of course, is in a recession, and you know that's understandable, as 50% of their government funds came from oil, and oil went down significantly. Oil's coming back, so I think the overall attitude has gotten much more upbeat. And really where that manifests itself in the most important manner is it alleviates concerns about banks. Now, what I'm talking about here is that there was a tremendous amount of loans to the oil and energy industry. And oil in the 20s causes a lot of concerns about people defaulting on loans. Oil in the $45 range, that concern abates meaningfully. But the top 30 energy countries, energy companies in the world have about 50% of their market cap in debt. So that was that's what caused the concerns in January, and it's abated noticeably.
Speaking of oil, you see the shockwaves from this global oil rout, for lack of a better word. GE posting a decline, S&P downgrades ExxonMobil, I think, for the first time ever. How does this play out? You see oil prices coming back up a little bit. We ease out of this, or is this a push the panic button kind of a thing?
Well, you hear a lot. You hear a lot of things about how I've heard the number 1 million barrels a day has been cut from U.S. production. It's probably more like about 750,000, but I don't want to be too picky. But you have seen oil production level off and decline just slightly. Running out the growth in consumption versus production, we are back in balance by about October and November of this year. So, I fully expect oil to recover into the $50 to $60 range this fall and then gradually uptick from there unless we, inundate the market with a big surge in production.
I saw the gas prices too. Consumption's still up, and EIA data showing a 3.9% growth through the 4 weeks into mid-April, an increase this summer. That's not uncommon. So obviously, to warn everybody, gas prices will likely be going up, right?
They're going to go up because consumption in the U.S. is going up. People are driving more. I mean, it's seasonal to a large extent, but also I think it reflects the fact that people probably avoided driving a lot with gas at the $3.50 to $4 a gallon range. So people are looking at doing auto trips. I have a friend just bought an RV. I mean, the mentality's changed a little bit.
Yeah. Patrick Stone, Chairman and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title, joining us here. Pat, let's talk real estate now. I saw that Goldman Sachs forecasting 1.2 million household formations each of the next 4 years. I think we talked about this maybe a year ago. Obviously, this is good for housing, but I guess the concern I have as a consumer, as a layperson, is inventory, and especially in our region, there's a lot of pressure on inventory right now. With that many households being formed, where's the mashup here? What happens?
Well, this is interesting, and here's the basic problem, and that is you have a lot of first-time buyers that can't afford the down payment. They can afford the mortgage. Affordability is very good, but since the downturn, underwriting standards and requirements have been noticeably stricter, and the requirement for down payments much higher. There are a few programs in the 3% range, but by and large, the average first-time buyer is having a hard time making that first purchase because they don't have the down payment yet. They can't put 20% down. So I think one or two things will happen here. Either through wage and salary increase in time, we will get more first-time buyers, or you'll see some sort of meaningful program, hopefully rational program, to facilitate lending to first-time buyers. We've always had that, and we haven't had that since the downturn, so I do suspect we'll see something there. It'll be much better thought out than prior programs, but we will have household formation exceeding supply for, I would be surprised if you're not looking 7 to 10 years.
Okay, and that's good for multifamily then?
Well, it is. Multifamily prices have flattened. We had a very big surge in apartment building, but the rental rates haven't gone down, and they're not going to go down. So, 1.4 million household formation. I would suggest that, you and I have talked about this. The largest cohort population-wise in the U.S. right now is 20 to 25 years of age. The next biggest cohort is 25 to 29 or 25 to 30 years of age. So you have a tremendous amount of people coming into head of household age. And, so the demand for housing units is going to be there for, I'm saying 5 to 7 years, maybe even longer. And so prices and rents will stay up. I do think you're going to see more affordable housing, and you're going to see more construction of beginning or lower end housing. A couple of politicians have actually addressed this, one with a very significant housing program. So I think you'll see some changes in the next couple of years that make it possible for first time buyers.
Pat Stone joining us here on Business Briefing. That creates all sorts of other problems. I'm in Seattle, back and forth to Portland. You're in Portland, back and forth to Seattle and points beyond, particularly in our region. I mean, the traffic, it is really something to see what's happening here. The influx of people who are moving out of the Bay Area, relocating to Portland and Seattle because it's quote-unquote affordable. We think it's expensive here, and they're coming here, and it's a heck of a value for them.
It is, and it's going to get worse. We have something up here that it will increase in value noticeably in the next 20 years, and that's called water. And we have ample water. Economists who think long-term and who look at secular trends, not cyclical trends, they look at the Northwest as the ideal place for growth for the next 20 years. So get used to it. Traffic's going to be a problem. I don't see us keeping up with the infrastructure on the growth. I don't see it at all.
Okay, might want to send a memo to the politicians out there, maybe build some more freeways. Even I know we love that light rail, but hey, let's don't want to go political here. I saw a stat in the Wall Street Journal. This blew me away, that China produced more cement in 2011 and 2012 than the U.S. did in the entire 20th century. Is that true?
I don't know if it's true, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is. A really interesting thing in China is, first of all, I want to be real careful here. China is not going to implode. China is not going to go away. But the days of real rapid growth in China are probably over, and they're trying to move to a consumption economy, but they still have tremendous amount of state-owned businesses. And they seem reluctant to shut down businesses where there's no demand for their product. So they're producing cement, they're producing steel, they're producing a lot of goods that they used to export, and they're being stockpiled. And that way they can keep people employed, they can keep the population calm, if you will.
Always good to get reassurance from Patrick Stone. We appreciate his insight. When we come back, we'll talk about alternative lending online resources that are very valuable for small business owners. That's up next as Business Briefing continues.